Here
once
we are.
Again, it's Tuesday.
Yep.
We were recording. And,
it's what we do.
Welcome to Scary Dad Podcast, episode 92. It is the 16th of July, 2018. And, this one's
wow.
Gonna... Yeah, I know. This one's gonna be called Freak Show. So,
That lost piece of Americana that we don't enjoy anymore.
But before you get all offended, it was an actual thing.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about it. It's still kind of a thing in certain.
It's a different type of thing
in certain places, but we'll get into it.
First, the old business.
Old business. And I had to print it out and highlight it because my right hand ain't working too good. I don't know what the hell I did. Sunday I was just working around the house, just doing random stuff, cooking and whatever. Yesterday I woke up and I could not move my... I couldn't wiggle my fingers, I couldn't move my hand.
It comes with age, man.
It's just, like, it's the worst... I would say it's sprained, but I sprained it somehow without realizing it.
Well, the thing about it is, you know, you might have damaged a nerve in your elbow that is now affecting your hand. It's you'd never know what it could be, man.
But it's firing right now. Like, it sucks. Like, I've been chewing ibuprofen like crazy. It's just like, so it's not bad. Of course, then there's all of the different jokes. Even my wife was like, man, you should have woke me up. I didn't mean for you to, like, put yourself out of business, out of commission. I'm like, babe, come on. Everybody's like, oh, you fought a customer or something. Like, yeah, that's it. Anyway, walking around. But anyway, I can't write very well, so I had to print out old business. So if it's a little disjointed, it's because I'm reading it off a page instead of my hand.
It's not in order and everything. It hasn't been selected through.
Well, it's in order, but I don't have, like, intimate knowledge of it that I get from writing it down and kind of researching. But anyway... On this date, 1769, Father Junipero Sierra founds California's first mission, the Mission San Diego de Alcala. Over the following decades, it evolves into the city of San Diego, California, which is not the origin story that Will Ferrell gave it in Anchorman. So I don't know which one's true. The real...
I'm going to go with yours.
The meaning has been lost to time. I like the outtake of Anchorman when he and Christina Applegate are sitting in the car and he starts saying the lines and he just cracks up. He's like, this is ridiculous. All right. 1935. The world's first parking meter is installed in Oklahoma City. So can you imagine that? Like, all over the country, all over the globe. The world, oh, the whole world, parking's free. And then they put this one meter in, like, blink, except for right here. You have to pay.
And shortly thereafter, Paul Newman is working on the Mississippi Chain Gang.
That's it. Well, that was in the 60s, so that was only 25 years later.
Yeah, people were that disgusted with him that people, the anti-hero in the movie was destroying parking meters.
All right, for all of us fans of... the movie Jaws. On this date in 1945, during World War II, the heavy cruiser USS Indianapolis leaves San Francisco with parts for the atomic bomb Little Boy bound for Tiananmen Island. They delivered the bomb, then on the way back they got torpedoed and sunk, and then everybody got eaten by sharks.
Delivered the bomb.
Anyhow, delivered the bomb. Okay, 1948, the storming of the cockpit of the Miss Macau passenger seaplane operated by a subsidiary of the Cathay Pacific Airways marks the first aircraft hijacking of a commercial plane. That would take some balls.
Yeah.
I mean, regardless of your political bent, like, you'd have to know how to fly it just in case your threats don't go through. You're like, take this plane where I want it to go, or I'm going to kill you. Okay, fine, kill me. Now what?
Right. What you going to do now? You don't have parachutes.
Okay, one big piece of Americana is the circus under the big top. Traveling circus sets up, you know, comes to town, sets up in a spot, and everybody comes out, and then they pack up and leave mm-hmm. on a train. On this date in 1956, Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus closes its last big tent show in Pittsburgh. Due to changing economics, all subsequent shows will be held in arenas at the towns. So things are changing even way back then.
Yeah.
On this date in 1969, the Apollo program, Apollo 11, the first mission to land astronauts on the moon, is launched from the Kennedy Space Center in Cape Kennedy, Florida. And then 10 years later, 1979, Iraqi President Ahmed Hassan al-Bakr resigns and is replaced by Saddam Hussein.
He was there for a while.
And then on this date in 1999, John F. Kennedy Jr. dies when his plane crashes into the Atlantic Ocean off the coast of Martha's Vineyard. His wife and sister-in-law are also killed. Okay, notable deaths, or notable births, this date in 1887, Shoeless Joe Jackson. Mostly made famous by Field of Dreams.
Yes.
Played by Ray Liotta. But famous because they threw the World Series mm-hmm. and they got caught and then banned for life, and then gambling on any kind of baseball by any baseball player, past, you know, present or future. So even if you used to play and you gamble on baseball, you can have all of your titles and stuff.
Take it away. That's no Hall of Fame. And that's what Pete Rose is going through.
Pete Rose was betting on himself. That's what's crazy is. He's like, I'm so confident, I'll put some money down on me to hit a home run. And he did. I mean, he wasn't throwing it.
Yeah.
He was betting against himself. Right. You're betting on himself, and he still stripped. On this date in 1907, for the popcorn enthusiast, Mr. Orville Redenbacher was born.
This guy that did the airplane thing, right?
Yeah. And the popcorn.
Yeah, and then they celebrated, and they decided to pop popcorn for the celebration of the first man flight.
There was more than one Orville at some point. Not going to find many of them now. Okay, and then on this date in 1963, actress Phoebe Cates.
Nice.
Yeah. 1967, happy birthday to Mr. Will Ferrell. We were just talking about him a second ago. 1971, Mr. Corey Feldman.
Cheers to Mr. Feldman, one of our favorites.
And in notable deaths, not too many today. It's pretty, on this date in 2014, Mr. Johnny Winter. Mm-hmm. And on this date in 2017, we lost Mr. George Romero.
Icon there.
So that is it for old business.
Alright.
I'll take a quick break and we'll come back with the new.
Yes, we will.
Are you hungry? Hungry as a gremlin? Here's gremlin cereal.
Gremlins, gremlins, bite after bite. What a tasty way to satisfy a gremlin appetite.
Gremlins is a deliciously sweet, crunchy cereal that satisfies the hungry little gremlin that's in all of us.
Gremlins, gremlins, bite after bite. What a tasty way to satisfy a gremlin appetite.
Gremlin cereal is part of this complete breakfast.
Gremlin, yum yum.
We're back.
Here we are. Okay. Start off with a little bit of film news.
New business is new business, and this is new business.
It has been announced by Don Mancini. You know who Don Mancini is, of course, from Child's Play. That Child's Play, the TV series, will be premiering. I'm not sure if I'm excited about it or not. I kind of am. For the simple fact that I don't think it's going to be like a sci-fi network or AMC crap. There's no announcement what network it's going to be on. But he has told Bloody Disgusting that its tone is going to be dark and disturbing. He also mentioned we plan to use Child's Play in the title. We want to definitely signal that we're going to go dark. Darker than ever before. It's going to be very creepy. So I kind of got my hopes up it'll be a Netflix or an Amazon streaming service type thing. Which could actually make it interesting. I don't know how they can do a whole TV series you know, I would think it would just be a limited run, one or two seasons at the most. Mm-hmm. But Brad Dourif is coming back to play the voice of Chucky, so we shall see how that turns out. In other news, okay, Michael Gingold, I hope I'm not messing up his name. He was a writer and editor for Fangoria for a long time. He's contributed to Rue Morgue. He wrote a book last year called Fright Fest Guide to Monster Movies. So now he has a new book coming out called Ad Nauseam, Newsprint Nightmares from the 1980s. It looks really cool. It's a 248-page, full-color, hardbound book that showcases over 450 newspaper ads for horror films from the 80s.
Oh, sweet.
So they've actually gone and they've released a few prints of some of the ads that will be featured in the book, but you can see it's all the original newspaper ads, theater times. There'll be little notations on the side giving you information about the movies themselves. It looks like it's going to be a really cool book.
That looks awesome.
And something that I may end up picking up. So look for Ad Nauseam, book coming out later on this year. It ought to be pretty neat. If you want some nostalgia with your horror, like I love to have.
Totally.
It'll be something to pick up for sure. All right, I got a couple of deaths that we're going to discuss. First, Leon White, better known as his wrestling alter ego Vader, passed away at the age of 63. And it's like I was telling you earlier, he was, when I used to watch wrestling back in the day, he was one of the more intimidating figures because he was a huge ginger with this weird-ass mask. It's a mask which you were like, why is he wearing a mask? It has huge holes in it. You could see his face pretty much, but he just wore it for the fear factor. And he was a big guy, and he moved really fast for a big guy. Very intimidating wrestler. He died after fighting several heart issues and actually had open heart surgery in March of this year. So he ended up getting a case of pneumonia after the surgery and never recovered from that. So here's a little swig to Vader.
Forgot to open it.
And bigger news. You know I've talked about these guys a million times. You know how much a huge part of that Pantera is in my life. I fucking love Pantera. I remember vividly the day I first heard Pantera's music. It was in my mom's apartment. My buddy Thomas came over with a cassette tape called Cowboys from Hell. I'd never heard of them. I remember looking at the cassette tape. I didn't look at it very hard, but I saw a bunch of long-haired guys in like an old West bar. And I actually told him, what's this glam rock shit you want me to listen to? And he goes, no, really, put it on. And I heard that opening riff for Cowboys from Hell, and I was hooked on Pantera ever since.
The first time I heard Pantera was on the radio. We had Z-Rock here in Houston. Z-Rock, 106.9. And they played Cemetery Gates. And I didn't know who I was listening to, but I knew I needed to find out. And I remember, because it was one of those situations where, you know, they would never, like sometimes with the radio, sometimes they'll announce like, hey, here's some Pantera, and then play the song. Other times they'll play a song, and then they'll recap it like half an hour later and be like, in that last hour you heard some Pantera, and so you didn't really but I heard that, you know, got a taped copy of Cowboys from Hell when Vulgar came out. Me and my buddy got it, and we were just like, it was funny because I got the CD and I wasn't 100% sold on it because it was a departure from Cowboys. Mm-hmm. So I like let him have it. I was like, here, listen to this, tell me what you think. I don't know, it's a little different, it's a little heavier, I'm not sure if it's, and he just got sucked right into Pantera and has never come out. Sucked right into the album. But I've been following them since day one. I've seen them live several times, multiple times. Every song. Bands I was in used to cover those songs. I mean,
what I always loved about Pantera is they got heavier. Mm-hmm. Most bands mellow out. Phil Anselmo got heavier. The whole band got heavier as time progressed. Yes. And it was just, They weren't worried about being comfortable with their record sales. They wanted to push the envelope to see how far they could go with it, and they did, man. It's,
well, and the weird Pantera is a strange dynamic in music in general, because their third album, Far Beyond Driven, it opened number one on the Billboard charts.
Yep.
Okay, you think about what what reaches number one on Billboard?
Your pop music bullshit.
It's not Pantera.
It's not heavy metal, no.
And that was before they had separate charts. Like, I mean, yeah, you had pop, you had country, and then you had, you know, but they, like, on the mainstream, you know, top rock chart, they hit number one. They opened it, they debuted at number one and stayed there. People who did not listen to metal listened to Pantera.
Right.
And when I was in high school, you'd have like preppy girls walking around with Pantera t-shirts on. Mm-hmm. And you'd wonder, do you actually listen to that? But they did. You know, especially since they were from Texas. I mean, they were just from you know, a little bit north of here, in Dallas.
Right.
I got a funny story. It's one of those things, it's just one of those best days of your life sort of things. So there used to be a band here in Houston called the Galactic Cowboys, and there was another one called Hellstar, and they played a beach party down in Galveston. So me and my buddy Jason, we went down to Galveston, and most of the time when you go to Galveston, you hit the end of the road where you meet the seawall, and most people take a left.
Yeah.
Well, this one we went took a right.
Like you're going back to a surfside.
And went off into the boondocks for a while. And then, so we stopped and got a couple cases of beer. And then, I don't even think I was 21 yet. I might have been 19 or 20. We go down and we find the party and we park. We pay our fee. And we get in and it's set up. There's vendors and food, and it's just a festival on the beach, and these heavy metal bands, these local heavy metal bands, are just jamming all day. And so Jason worked nights, so he's like, man, I'm exhausted, I'm gonna go sleep in the truck, I'm gonna go take a nap. So he disappeared and I'm by myself and I'm just wandering. So I walk and there's all these hot chicks, these metal chicks, and they're hanging out in this little convertible and they're jamming Pantera in their car and they're drinking beer. So I walk past them, and I walk to the vendor's spot, and I get a hot dog or something, and I walk past this this booth, and this dude's selling Far Beyond Driven, and it was like a week or two before it came out. He was pre-selling, like totally illegal, but it was a real thing. So I was like, you know, he's like $10. I was like, sold. So I get my hot dog and I get my beer, and I'm like, what am I gonna do now? I was like, I gotta go put this in the car. So I go wander back over there, and those girls are still sitting there jamming in that car. And I'm like, hey, y'all.
What is the new Pantera?
You want to hear the new Pantera? And they're like, fuck yeah. So put the CD in, and it was just me and four girls jamming the hell out of this record that had not been heard by anyone. Drinking beer on the beach, you know, just like. So I'm sitting there tying on a buzz. Jason finally wakes up. We go down, you know, we hang out. We watch the rest of the bands. And right a little bit before it starts to get dark, this like weird fog comes off of the water, and it's like thick, it's like pea soup fog, and it just like hits us like a wall, just like woof, and it actually muffled the sound of the band.
Wow.
Like you could not see, thick. Visibility was nothing, there was like some lights and you could see some stuff, but and it was just the most surreal thing. And after drinking all day and just kind of, you know, like that little bit of a sunburn and walking around in this creepy, like listening to heavy metal blaring, it was like one of the best days ever. It was so cool.
Cool, dude.
And a lot of that had to do with Pantera. Like,
for those of
like,
y'all,
I don't
that
even remember the music from the bands. I remember that Pantera.
For those that aren't familiar with him, Vinnie Paul and his brother Dimebag Darrell, who also passed away tragically, formed Pantera in 1981. The group found mainstream success when the lead singer Phil Anselmo joined the ensemble, and things just blew up from there. Unfortunately, the band disbanded in 2003, and the Avid Brothers formed a new band called Damage Plan. And
Dimebag got shot in
2004.
Yep.
Which I never saw Damage Plan play. I did see Down play when Phil Anselmo made his band Down. Mm-hmm. They opened up for Metallica one year. I'm a big Phil Anselmo fan. And that might offend some Pantera fans because he's pretty much the reason why the group broke up.
Well, it could be said that he's the reason why that Dime got killed, because that fan was unbent. That fan was just broken.
Right.
And Phil completely not serious, but in a, like, somebody should go kick his ass sort of
way.
He
did that. It was an interview he did in England. He made that comment.
And he just made a comment, and, like, somebody ought to go fuck him up. And somebody did.
Yeah.
And, like, I've seen Phil Anselmo in interviews, like, you know, you were talking about rock and rollers. We're talking about musicians. Ain't nobody, you know,
they talk shit.
Well, they talk shit, but nobody really means anybody harm.
Right. Yeah, they just talking shit.
They're just talking shit, but then, you know, you got to think with a band like Pantera, you know, they attract some unhinged folks.
Yeah.
And so it was unfortunate.
Dude, they were huge,
all around,
man. I don't know if any. What true heavy metal band that played that heavy of music would you compare to the success of Pantera? I mean, Metallica got soft.
Well, right. Metallica was sliding down. Pantera was making fun of them.
Yeah.
At the last show that I saw with Typo Negative. They were joking and making fun of like, Phil and someone was like, when I cut my hair, I shave that shit off. He just gets harder core when he cuts his hair. But, you know, just one of those. Nobody. Really nobody. They opened the door for a lot of the heavy bands that came afterwards.
Yeah, they gave mainstream success to that type, that genre of music. Tremendous. They debuted at number one on the Billboard.
Oh, they were selling out arenas.
They had nine albums that hit the Billboard 200. You know, it's.
And they sold out everywhere they went.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you don't be that heavy and do that.
Right.
So.
Here's a little bit to Vinnie Paul.
Here's to Vinnie Paul.
Always leave a mark on my life, for sure. And just to add a quick little bit of levity, let's go to Florida.
All right.
State troopers pulled over 2005 Nissan after spotting it driving erratically. In the vehicle was motorist Scott Garrett. He was lethargic, slurring his words, and had really red eyes. On the car's front passenger seat was an open bottle of spice rum. He was tying one on, dude. So the cops were like, hey, they gave Phil a sobriety test, obviously drunk. He told the cops that he wasn't driving the vehicle. His dog was. He threw his dog under the bus for erratic driving. The cops did not buy it. He had a blood alcohol content 3 times the legal limit of 0.08. So, 0.24. Wow. He had Taiwan on pretty good, but yeah, tried throwing his dog under the bus. Dog was driving.
I bet you when he got home, that dog was like hiding. He ran out on me, bro.
But that's it. That's what we got.
All right. Well, let's take a break and we'll come back with some freaks.
Okay.
We told you we had living, breathing monstrosities. You laughed at them, shuddered at them, and yet. But for the accident of birth, you might be even as they are. Their code is a law unto themselves. Offend one, and you offend them all.
That's it. Go ahead and laugh.
At first, I could not believe my own eyes.
It's always been that way. I guess it always will be.
That little ape's got ideas about you.
Done.
Are you laughing at me?
He has told you of the fortune he has inherited.
And I have him like that.
Oh, it's so good to be around.
How'd you like them?
You should have caught me before my operation.
And you must come to see us sometime.
Let her try doing anything to one of us.
Oh, how beautiful you look tonight.
Me too. Are not strong.
You have got a good figure.
To me, you're a man. But to her, you're only something to laugh at.
Jesse, slimy, freak.
And we are back.
Yes, we are.
Okay, now in my life, well, since I was a kid, I don't remember ever not knowing about sideshows and freak shows. You know, as a kid, it was just a... But I've never actually seen one. I've seen the Jim Rome Circus, which is kind of like a sideshow thing, but it's mostly people impaling themselves and sword swallowing.
Doing weird things.
Yeah, yes. There wasn't exploitation of someone because of their handicap, which is what the traditional sideshow freak shows were. Unfortunately, back then, there was such a stigma and so little care given to people that had abnormalities or severe handicaps. It was the only way to make money and survive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, movies were commonplace back in the day, just talking about freaks and just the exploitation of it. It was accepted. It's a sad, sad reality that, you know, that it happened. It doesn't happen anymore because now there's government services, there's medical services to try to take care of people like that, try to make their lives as better, as good as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But back in the day, these people, some of these people achieved notoriety and fame they never would have had otherwise.
Absolutely. Well, I was going to say, like, it's bad that everybody wants to look at something. You know, everybody wants to look and be like, you know, even... Just look at the little kids, right? Like, little kids are not shy about asking what's wrong. You know, it's like, they'll walk up and be like, what happened to you? You know?
Right.
But they're curious, and it draws the eye, and it's kind of a fear factor, and it's that old adage of, you know, there but for the grace of God go I. So you kind of, it's a cautionary tale, and, you know, tolerance being what it is, I don't know, you're right. There wasn't a whole lot of employment, but
right.
a lot too, is a lot of what made these folks different, like the lobster hands,
yeah,
or, you know, some sort of gigantism or whatever. They would not have been able to function regularly anyway. They did have handicaps that prevented them from performing normal jobs, as opposed to just people being weirded out by them. But you wouldn't have a bus driver that didn't have arms.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like you couldn't just run down to the Chamber of Commerce and fill out applications.
Right.
You know? So it did give these folks an avenue. It gave them a way to earn a living and actually rise in society and into some sort of fame and prominence. So
unfortunately, you also had the dark side of it when you watch a movie like The Elephant Man, where it really shows the seedy side of people taking advantage of the disadvantaged.
Of course. Well, that's everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, not excusing it, but I'd say that in general, you probably got about anywhere from somewhere between 1 and 10% of the population is just
bad.
Just evil.
Yeah.
Just crazy. Screw loose. Something's wrong in their head. And that percent blends. They're in society. They're in, they're cops. They're nurses. They're school teachers. They're insurance salesmen. Mm-hmm. You know, but they're there. So, if there is a subgroup to be exploited, there's going to be somebody that's going to exploit them. And as sucky as it sounds, it's just how it is. So you hope for the best. You hope that it doesn't happen as often as it does, you know what I mean? And then you reform your society to where it doesn't happen anymore. So then, you know, fist bump to that.
That's right. So. Okay, now, are you familiar with the 1932 movie Freaks?
Mm-hmm.
I've seen clips of it on YouTube and stuff. I've never seen the whole movie itself, but in 1932, a movie called Freaks came out, directed by Todd Browning. Now, Todd Browning was just coming off his directorial debut of Dracula. So he was, at that time, kind of a horror icon. And MGM hired him to make a movie. And pretty much gave him carte blanche. Here, have fun with it. You know, give us another Dracula. Well, Todd Browning grew up in the circus. His family were circus performers. So he grew up with this, living the life with the sideshow.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't in a sad way. He was fond of the sideshow. He was fond of the freaks, just the different acts. And he wanted to make a movie about what he had seen, you know, just about those people and then the family type bond that these sideshow freaks had with each other, because they stuck together. They had their part of the circus, and they handled each other. They
took care of each other,
settled differences and problems amongst each other. You know, he wanted to kind of debut that. Now, you've seen Freaks, right? You
said I'm aware of it. I've never seen the movie.
Do you know what it's about?
No.
Okay, what it's about is you have a set of sideshow freaks. One particular one is one of the little people. And rumor starts going around that he's about to inherit a lot of money. Okay. So the rumor starts getting around, and Cleopatra, one of the characters, is one of the normies in the movie. She's kind of this beautiful woman that's in the circus. She's a trapeze artist, if I'm not mistaken. She gets wind of this, and she gets with her boyfriend, who's the strong man. They call him Hercules. Said, hey, we're going to go ahead and we're going to steal this guy's money. What I'm going to do is I'm going to get him to fall in love with me, marry me, and then we're going to kill him. So Hercules is all along with it and everything. So she kind of, this movie was made. Originally, the film was 90 minutes long. MGM started watching this movie. They said, got to cut that out. Dropped it down to 64 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Changed the ending of the movie and everything. The movie had a much darker ending originally. They kind of changed it to a happier ending. But essentially, she marries into the group. The sideshow freaks accept her. They actually have kind of a ritual where they initiate her into the world of the sideshow, and they do this big toast, but they do this weird chant saying, we accept you, you're one of us now, we accept you, you're one of us now. And she's getting drunk and she's kind of freaking out, you know, because it's just really weird to her. All of a sudden, that initial night when they're celebrating their wedding, she starts with the poisoning. So she starts giving the guy poison in his wine slowly. She's going to kill him over time. And then she gets really drunk at the party and divulges her plan to everybody that she's going to kill him. So these people take care of each other. So they decide this isn't going to happen. See the movie. Spoiler alert.
From the 30s.
The movie opens up with someone going up to the freak show side of the circus. And there's a barker out there saying, look in the box, look and see this horrible disfigurement in this box. Somebody looks in the box and freaks out. Then it goes back. So it basically, they show the end of the beginning. She's, Cleopatra's in that box.
Yeah.
They tear her ass a new hole. And this movie actually used actual sideshow freaks from carnivals and stuff in the movie itself as some of the characters, and made a few of them very famous through this movie and stuff. It's an interesting movie. I highly recommend you check it out. It's actually, I want to say on Rotten Tomatoes, it's like a 90% or like that. So it's a
64-minute version.
Yeah. Yeah. The 90-minute version does not exist anymore. No one has ever seen it. The only version you can see now is a 64-minute.
Yeah, they used to just throw that stuff away.
Yeah.
When it was cutting room floor, that just got swept into a pile.
But the most famous one to come out of this movie, the one that people remember the most, is the Pinhead. The Pinhead is Schultze. Are you familiar with Schultze the Pinhead?
Mm.
Okay, Schultze the Pinhead. You know what a pinhead is?
Yeah, it's a microcephaly.
Yes.
So, a condition linked to mental retardation and characterized by a very small pointed head and small overall structure. They were considered as missing links or specimens of an extinct race.
Yes. Schultze the Pinhead was the most famous pinhead ever. And this is Schultze. This is from the movie itself right here, this picture. But Schultze was also a sideshow. After the movie, he went back to the carnival and everything. He was in a couple other movies. I want to say, was it Spider Baby featured pinheads in it also?
You're a lot more familiar with this than I am. I'm sitting here learning. I think
Spider Baby also featured a group. It was actually three of them. Three pinheads they had in one movie that were siblings. But Schultze, very distinct look. And there was also a comic book that was made
after. He looks like the girl from American Horror Story.
Yeah, yeah, she has the same, it was the same character type thing. But yeah, it was the same.
She was made up.
Yeah, she was made up. You know, she does suffer from some disability. I can't remember what it is.
It's not physical. If you see her outside of her makeup, she looks normal.
But there's been a lot of famous ones through history, and some of these you'll probably recognize when I show you their pictures and everything. Just you'd be like, oh yeah, I remember seeing that guy before. Francesco Lentini, who was right around the time of the movie coming out, during his highest point of his life. He was once known as the King of the Freaks, but he was born with an entirely complete third leg. And he was the three-legged man. And Sim, as you can see, he had an entire leg coming.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. His condition is a result of a partially formed twin that didn't separate properly from his body. They brought him to America as a young child, and he quickly became depressed when he realized how different he was from other children. But he went to the school for disabled children. He became more accepting of himself and his unusual body, and he ended up finding success and fame in the sideshow. Became famous performing feats like kicking a soccer ball with his third leg or jumping rope. He was a very well-respected member of the sideshow community. So he just one of the many.
Yeah, when I was doing research, I was looking more at P.T. Barnum's American Museum.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously, the number one circus. So you're going to have competing circuses and places around that have their own little sideshows and maybe have a couple. But P.T. Barnum, that was like going Hollywood. So if you were any kind of a circus performer, that was the epitome of making it, you know, to be in Barnum's. But he was an ad man. He was a barker.
Yeah.
Big promoter. So he made stuff up. It didn't matter if it was true. And, you know, people didn't really care that it was true. Just they wanted to see it. It was a spectacle.
Yeah.
But he was one of the excuse me. He says, "I don't believe in duping the public, but I believe in first attracting, then pleasing them." He began the American Museum, which had a constantly rotating act schedule, which included the Fat Lady, midgets, giants, and other people deemed to be freaks. The museum drew in about 400,000 visitors a year. So, I mean, that is tremendous.
Oh, yeah.
Think about that. No internet, no phone, just flyers, newspapers.
Yeah. You come into town, you spread flyers around the area and see who comes in. Nobody's planning for this like 2 months in advance.
The American Museum was one of the most popular museums in New York City to exhibit freaks in 1841. He made the freaks a major attraction following mainstream America mid-19th century. He advertised it aggressively and made up outlandish stories about his exhibits. He offered one ticket that guaranteed admission to his lectures, theatrical performances, an animal menagerie, and a glimpse at curiosities both living and dead. One of his famous exhibits was Charles Stratton, the General Tom Thumb, who was 4 years old but was stated to be 11. Charles had stopped growing after the first 6 months of his life, at which point he was 25 inches tall and weighed 15 pounds. The boy was taught to imitate people from Hercules to Napoleon. By five, he was drinking wine. By seven, smoking cigarettes and cigars for the public's amusement. Barnum toured Europe with him and met Queen Victoria, who was amused. Barnum paid Stratton very well, about $150 a week. When Stratton retired, he lived in the most esteemed neighborhood of New York. He owned a yacht and dressed in the nicest clothing he could buy. But he started working at 4 years old.
God. It is crazy, man.
Let's see. They had human curiosities in the museums, including an albino family, the living Aztecs, three dwarfs, a black mother with two albino children, Swiss bearded lady, the Highland fat boys, and what is it? Which was a disabled black guy. What is it? That's what it is. Barnum introduced the man monkey, who was a microcephalic. Who spoke a mysterious language that Barnum created. In 1862, he discovered the giantess Anna Swan and Commodore Nutt, a new Tom Thumb, with whom Barnum visited Abraham Lincoln at the White House. And during the Civil War, the museum drew large audiences from people seeking diversion from the conflict. His most popular and highest-grossing act was the Tattooed Man. He claimed to be a Greek-Albanian prince raised in a Turkish harem. He had 338 tattoos covering his body, which by today's standards is tiddlywinks.
Yeah.
Each was ornate and told a story. He said that he was on a military expedition but was captured by native people who give him the choice of either being chopped into little pieces or receive full body tattoos. The process took 3 months and he was the only hostage who survived. He began to earn more than $1,000 a week just on people coming to see him, which in the 1800s was
a lot of money.
Yeah, that's a lot of money now. $1,000 a week is $52,000 a year.
It's a lot of money.
So get a job at 52 grand and be like, man, this is a pretty good job. That's like almost, that's like 100 grand a week. 100 grand a week for being tattooed, man. That's insane. His wealth became so staggering that the New York Times wrote, he wears very handsome diamond rings and other jewelry valued at about $3,000, which is $71,500
in today's
dollars. And usually goes armed to protect himself from persons who might try to rob him. Upon his death, he donated about half his life earnings to other freaks who did not make as much money as he did. Nice guy, too.
Yeah. Well, like I said, the movie showed how they were like a family. They took care of each other. You know, they made sure no harm came to one another, and they were a good unit together. Mm-hmm. And this, the other thing about the sideshow world is they found a place they fit in. You know, nowhere else could they go where everybody around you has something special about them that makes them different from everybody else, except for the sideshow. It's mm-hmm. your new family. A lot of these people, their families sent them off.
Oh, yeah.
They sold them off to the sideshow because they couldn't do anything.
Either sent them to the sideshow or dropped them off at orphanages.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and a lot of these people had, I'll say, not necessarily debilitating, but medical problems, too, that, you know, what are you going to do? Like, you can't afford prosthetics or peg legs or surgeries and stuff.
Right.
You know, got to send them out on their own.
It's like in Poland, a gentleman named Stefan Bobrowski. Born in 1891, he was the Lion Face Boy. And this is a picture of Mr. Bobrowski. You can see
he's very famous.
Yes. He is an ordinary boy, except he suffered from hypertrichosis, which is a disorder that causes a thick coat of hair to grow all over his body. Basically, he had an animal's coat on him. His mother was convinced the affliction was the result of her witnessing Stefan's father being attacked by a lion when she was pregnant, making the boy cursed. So because she thought he was inhuman, she gave him away to a German entertainer. Said, here, I don't want him. He's cursed. Take him. Turns out he was not a monster at all. In fact, he was well known as being a kind, gentle, and intelligent man who spoke 5 languages. Spent a portion of his act simply talking to his audience, just like he was with a group of friends. He was so successful as a circus performer that he was able to retire in his 30s and return to Europe. Unfortunately, he died of a heart attack at the age of 41. But yeah, his mom just tossed him aside, and he found acceptance in the sideshow.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to make the sideshow things sound like something we should do again today or anything like that.
No, not at all. But you always have to look at context, and you have to look at what was the alternative.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they would have been in convalescent homes of some sort. They would have been on some sort of, in an asylum, committed, homeless maybe.
Mm-hmm.
These were not good times. I mean, in the Civil War in America, it was not a good time to be a normal, healthy person.
Right.
And unless you happened to be rich in the North, I mean, it wasn't good. Rich or poor didn't matter. You know, they were coming and barreling through and burning everything. You know, they didn't, I mean, romanticized versions of what you see in the movies, the Civil War devastated a significant portion of the country.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's been told that every dollar that was made from the founding, or not even the founding, but from the discovery, the landing, so when Columbus landed, every dollar that had been made up to that point was disintegrated. It was destroyed. That much wealth went away in the Civil War. It was bad news. To have a place to go when you were freaking just damn near anybody was a blessing.
Right.
So you have to contextualize it. Are you going to build a new freak show? No. But even so, we still, in movies sometimes, like I know for a fact in Dawn of the Dead remake, they hired paraplegics or amputees to be the legless zombies. You know, well, why not? I mean, hey, we need somebody without legs.
Yeah.
Help wanted. You know, like, that's not exploitation. That's just filling a need. And if you're willing, I don't think that's a bad thing.
Right.
So, anyway, continue.
Just some other ones they had. You know, you had your standards at most freak shows. You had your bearded lady. You had your strong man. You had your tiny person. You had your fat lady. Then you had, you know, some of the other not as common ones, the human skeletons, which one of the more famous human skeletons was Isaac Sprague. He was normal boy until he was 12 years old. All of a sudden, he began to suffer from an illness. He lost weight at an incredible rate until finally his muscle mass had virtually evaporated. In his adult years, he weighed no more than 43 pounds. The condition left him unable to perform any normal jobs, so to pay the bills, he joined a sideshow. He spent most of his career with P.T. Barnum. His condition wore out his fragile body. He died at 46. But as a result of his popularity, the living skeleton actors became more common at many sideshows. But he was a living skeleton. I mean, he'd lost all his muscle mass, so his skin was just attached to his skeleton. So
it was just tendons moving him around.
Yeah, yeah. It's very, very sad. But another one, the Camel Girl. So Ella Harper was born with an unusual orthopedic condition called congenital genu recurvatum, also known as back knee deformity. Her legs were twisted backwards, causing her to walk on all fours with her butt being a hump, looking like a camel. In 1880, she was a star of a major sideshow billed as the Camel Girl. She appeared on stage alongside a real camel. Touted her as the most wonderful freak of nature since the creation of the world, and that her counterpart never did exist. She wasn't interested in stardom. She left show business around the turn of the century and never returned to the sideshow again. She ended up getting married, retired in Nashville, Tennessee, where she died in 1921. Now, you're going to recognize this picture quick when I show you this. This is probably the most famous sideshow act ever. Everybody's seen these guys. Chang and Ang Bunker. You familiar with them?
Yeah, the Siamese
these
twins.
Guys? The Siamese twins. They were a lot of times they're called the original Siamese twins. They're the ones that kind of jumped into the sideshow, and everybody wanted Siamese twins after that. Brothers were conjoined twins who were born in Siam. Doctors at the time did not know how to safely separate them, although the procedure would have been easy today. But at that time, they just didn't have the technology. When they were young, a promoter convinced their parents to exhibit them on a world tour, which brought them fame and fortune. However, when their contract was over, they went into business for themselves, buying a large plantation in North Carolina. They wanted to live as normal as they could, so they married two local women who were sisters. Trading off in the bedroom, they fathered, guess how many children they had?
A lot.
21. Their wives, however, did not get along, so the brothers moved into two separate houses, alternately spending a few days at each residence. Chang suffered a stroke in later years and began drinking heavily, which didn't affect his other brother because they didn't share the same circulatory system. They actually had separate hearts and everything. One morning, however, Ang awoke to find his brother dead. Doctor rushed to the scene to perform a virgin separation, but it was too late and both brothers died that morning. But they lived a normal life, as normal as you could.
Yeah, it's normal. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, some of the stuff we talked about, it says freak shows were viewed as a normal part of American culture in the late 19th century and to the 20th. The shows were viewed as a valuable form of amusement for middle class people and were quite profitable for the showmen. Some scholars have argued that the freak shows were also beneficial for the people with disabilities, giving them jobs and a steady income rather than being institutionalized for their disabilities, which we've touched on.
Yeah.
Again, not saying that it's the greatest life, but if you're alternative is being institutionalized, being thrown into Arkham, you know, because you're not quite normal.
A lot of them ended up having much more normal lives than normal people have.
Right. And it was because they managed an income.
Yeah.
And they were socialized. They were around people.
Yep.
They, you know. Let's see. Other scholars have argued that the showmen and the managers exploited freak show performers' disabilities just for profit.
A lot of them probably did.
Of course. You know that it did. With any yin, there's a yang. You know, there's good and bad with everything. Changing attitudes about physical differences led to the decline of the freak show as a form of entertainment. towards the end of the 19th century. His previously mysterious anomalies were scientifically explained as genetic mutations or diseases. Freaks became the objects of sympathy rather than fear or disdain. Laws were passed restricting freak shows. For example, Michigan law forbids the, quote, exhibition of any deformed human being or human monstrosity except for as used for scientific purposes. Somehow, that doesn't sound better.
How would you define somebody being a monstrosity? You're a monstrosity, you can't get on stage.
As defined by
law. It's pretty cold,
Get off the stage, monstrosity. Okay, you're just short, you're okay, but...
You've got a third leg, you're a monstrosity, you gotta go.
During the start of the 20th century, movies and television began to satisfy audiences' thirst to be entertained. People could see similar types of acts and abnormalities from the comfort of their own homes or in a theater. They no longer needed to pay to see it. Though movies and television played a big part in the decline of the freak show, the rise of disability rights was the true cause of the death of the genre. It was finally viewed as wrong to profit from others' disabilities, and the days of manipulation were done. However, in many places, freak shows are still popular. Popular networks like TLC offers shows that exploit people in the same way as Barnum's Museum did. There are shows like Little People, Big World and My 600-Pound Life look at the oddities of human nature and create audiences for them. This rise in demand only causes more shows to be produced, such as The Man with Half a Body and I Am the Elephant Man. These modern freaks are paid handsomely, bringing an average of $8,000 an episode. Though paid well, the freaks of the 19th century did not always enjoy the quality of life that this idea led to. Frank Linetti, the three-legged man, was quoted as saying, "My limb does not bother me as much as the curious, critical gaze."
Which is understandable. I mean, emotionally, that would affect you more. You get used to having a third leg. You never get used to people staring at you, at your third leg.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because you probably forget it's there. But you got somebody that's going to remind you that it is.
And that's true. Of course, the flip side of that is you're still going to have to go to the grocery store.
Yeah.
You're still going to have to go to Academy to pick up a baseball hat. And people are going to be gawking at you.
Right.
Would you rather get paid for it or do it for free?
Right.
You know, so, I mean, there's always a but in that conversation. Yep. That's pretty much what I got.
Some other famous freaks that we have here. There's your human pincushions. Now, a lot of people nowadays, when they think of pincushions, they think of somebody with a lot of piercings or somebody that's going to lay on a bed of needles, that kind of shit. Well, Mr. Miranda Joe became famous because he had a remarkable ability. He could stick sharp things through his entire body and not get hurt. He wouldn't just prick himself and put a little ways in. He wouldn't just swallow a sword. He would actually stick swords through his chest, where it went into his back and came out of his nipple. And he also did this little trick with things like pencils, screwdrivers, all kind of that kind of stuff. He claimed he learned the trick from Hindu fakirs, but he just made that story up. He'd never been to India before, so no one really knows where he learned his unusual talent. Several doctors explained, even performing x-rays on him with a sword still sticking through his body, no one could figure out how he did it. Modern researchers believe he had created fistulas, or small scar tunnels, through his body over the years and just made sure to put the swords through the same spots each time. But he was a real pincushion. I mean, he stuck these swords all the way through and through his body. Then, of course, you had people like your Elastic Man, James Morse. He was born with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, disorder that allowed him to stretch his skin to unbelievable lengths. Morse took advantage of the malady. The tour is the India Rubber Man or the Elastic Skin Wonder. His skin was so rubbery he could take the skin around his neck and pull it over his eyes. With P.T. Barnum Circus, he made as much as $300 a week back in the day. Unfortunately, this order was also very painful. Welts and scars often formed in the areas that more stretched. After the turn of the century, he left show business and his whereabouts were unknown. Nobody knows what happened to him, but he could take the skin and stretch it all the way over. That's crazy, but I could see where that would hurt after a while.
Yeah.
Then, of course, you mentioned earlier Lobster Boy. Grady Stiles was a sideshow performer who became famous for his deformed hands and feet. Suffered from a condition known as ectrodactyly, causes digits to spread and fuse together. So essentially, he had the correct number of digits, they were just stuck together.
Mm-hmm.
This genetic disorder had run through many generations of his family. His father was also a circus performer, and he put Grady in his act at a young age, and two of Styles' four children also suffered from the same disorder. He became famous, but he was deeply embittered. He became an abusive alcoholic. In 78, he shot and killed his oldest daughter's fiance on the eve of their wedding. He was convicted of murder and sentenced to 15 years in prison. He ended up stopping drinking, remarried his first wife, but he began drinking again, and in 1992, they hired a sideshow performer to kill Styles and his wife that he was abusing and their son, and killed him. So yeah, he ended up being a bitter person, but it's a very famous sideshow. Everybody knows the Lobster Boy, mm-hmm. the hands that look like lobster claws. So that was a real. My Name Is Earl had a episode about sideshow freaks one time.
Yeah,
they featured a lot of the more famous ones, I guess you could say.
They were all real.
Yeah. Okay, Bill Dirks. You know what Bill Dirks is? He was a three-eyed man. I'm going to show you a picture of Bill Dirks. Okay, that's Bill Dirks. All right, now there's one thing about Bill Dirks, though.
He looks like a prop from The Thing.
Yeah, he does. due to a birth defect, it caused his face not to form properly and put a huge divot in the middle of his face. So he painted that eye there. So that's actually his face. His face was deformed in that way and separated. But there was just a little gap here, a little hole. He painted the eye there to make it look like he had three eyes. So he was rejected by his family and community, became socially awkward. In his teens, he joined a sideshow and became a successful performer, although he was taken advantage of since he couldn't read. He found joy in the fact that while once he was shunned by society, people paid to see him now all of a sudden. So he had like some kind of standing, some kind of prominence. He eventually married another performer, Mildred the Alligator Skin Woman. Together they were billed as the strangest married couple until Mildred's death in 1968. Of course, you already talked about Mr. Tom Thumb. And you always had bearded ladies.
Yeah.
You know, when I was in high school, there was a girl I remember. I'm not going to say her name or anything. She was a real nice girl. But she took a lot of heat because she had lots of facial hair. To the point where, when you were in high school, were you allowed to have any facial hair?
Mm-hmm.
We weren't either. They told her she had to shave because she had more facial hair than they would allow the boys to have.
Oh, that's got to be devastating.
Yeah, and it got around that it happened, you know, and it was just, I feel so bad. She was a real sweet girl. That is nothing compared to the bearded ladies they used to have at the sideshows. These ladies had a tremendous amount of testosterone going on. All sideshows had a bearded lady. It was a very, very popular attraction. The most famous is considered to be Annie Jones. She had an unusually hairy face from her birth in 1865 and began touring with Barnum's Company only 9 months old. She continued to tour through her adult life. She also campaigned to discontinue the use of the word freaks in sideshow performances. And I'm going to close out with Prince Ranadian. Living torso. Some of the living torso people will also sometimes build as a caterpillar, the caterpillar man, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially it was people with no limbs, no arms, no legs, just a torso and a head. Prince Redding, Randian, also went by other stage names as the Snake Man, Human Torso, Human Caterpillar. He was born in British Guiana in 1871. He had no limbs due to tetraamelia syndrome, a rare condition that was usually fatal. P.T. Barnum personally brought him to America. He was notable for being able to perform everyday tasks capably despite not having arms, legs, feet, or hands. He would move himself around the stage by wiggling his hips and shoulders. He could paint, write, shave, eat, and most famously roll, light, and smoke a cigarette without help. He demonstrated his last ability in the film Freaks from 1932. He also spoke Hindi, English, French, and German. So,
wow.
He was a real capable guy. Just
no
by birth,
legs.
He had no arms and no legs and found success in the sideshow.
That's insane. Just the ability. You'll see those people. You remember there used to be a show called That's Incredible,
yeah.
And then Ripley's Believe It or Not. And, you know, you see this guy, like, I'm not going to say, like, oh, it inspired me to just, but You know, I remember being a little kid and trying to learn how to play the guitar. And well, yeah, well, in my hands, you know, the muscles in my hands wouldn't do what I wanted them to do. And, you know, for those of you out there, that's called practice. You need to work on it in order to make your muscles. But I'd get frustrated and whatever. But then you'd see some dude on That's Incredible playing the guitar with his feet because he didn't have arms.
Right.
And you're like, okay, well, I'm kind of a lazy sack of crap.
How are we doing on time?
We are nearing the end. We're all right.
Because we also, there's more. I mean, sideshow. Circuses were a lot bigger back in the day. Mm-hmm. That was your form of entertainment. You know, you didn't have, most cities didn't have entertainment venues to go to all the time. So when a circus came to town, it was a big deal. So there were tons and tons. It wasn't just Barnum and Bailey Circus and the Universal Circus back then. It was a lot of circuses that were traveling. You had the four-legged lady Myrtle Corbin. She's known as the four-legged girl from Texas. She was born with a severe congenital deformity of conjoined twinning that caused her to have two separate pelvises and a smaller set of legs inside her legs that she was actually able to move. So it actually, it looked, in pictures, it looks like there's a small child sitting on her lap. But she was the four-legged girl. She's another one that ended up being in sideshows. She performed with Ringling Brothers in Coney Island. By the time she was 18, she had made enough money to retire. She went on to marry and had five children. It is said that three were born from... I didn't realize this part was coming up here. But she had two pelvises. So two of her kids came out of one, and one of them came out of the second one.
Oh, wow.
Pretty crazy, huh?
That is crazy. Imagine being a doctor delivering that kid. You're like, what is going on here?
They'd call Jesse Deadman to let him know about that one.
Shout out to Deadman.
But that's all I got.
All right.
We ended there. But yeah, like I said, I remember very vividly about sideshows. I remember seeing Elephant Man when I was very young. Thought it was a superhero movie. Little did I know. I'm just joking. I knew what it was.
You'd be like, oh my God.
Ooh, Elephant Man. He has the power of 10 elephants. So I knew what it was when I saw it, but it just, if you watch that movie, you do smile, but you also cry. And you see it wasn't an easy life for these people, but for some of them, it was the only life they knew. And it was the better life, better choice of the two that they had. So if you're not familiar with sideshows, learn about it. Like, it was a huge part of Americana back in the day. Huge part.
And the thing is, you go, okay, well, what happened to them? Because, okay, yeah, you can make a law against freak shows. That doesn't get rid of freaks. And the thing is, with science and medical advancements, a lot of these things,
you know, can be fixed.
Well, they can be fixed. And then also things, you know... Diet and exercise, birth defects, don't smoke while you're pregnant,
yeah.
Don't drink while you're pregnant, or, you know, just different things like that. The
don't smoke when you're 4 years old because you'd be like Tom Thun.
Yeah. Well, he stopped growing before he started smoking. I just wonder how many people are like, that's going to stunt your growth, kid, and he's over there like, he's good. Like the baby in,
good.
Yeah, in Bugs Bunny, like, remember the bearded baby? Like, argh, go away. But yeah, I mean, it's a piece of Americana that's gone. And a lot of them, I mean, they I don't want to say freaks, because that's not PC after the whole show, but the people that have these defects, they are still around, but they're not as around in the same... They can find work. They can find...
Yeah.
You know, they can live a life that they couldn't back then. So we don't need the freak show anymore.
Right.
As a society, and like I said earlier... What happens whenever you find you're exploiting the worst among you, the least fortunate among you? You reform your society, like we have, and you make that sort of stuff obsolete.
Right.
Which is, I think, progress, right? So, I don't know, don't want to get too serious, but I think that was a good show.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and cut it there. That has been episode 92 of Scary Dad Podcast. As always, go to the Twitter, to the Facebook, to Instagram. I'm sure we're on some kind of social media that I don't even know about.
Probably so.
I Google myself sometimes, and I'm like, what the hell is this thing? But yeah, hop into iTunes and leave us a review. Or don't leave us a review. Just hit one of those star buttons and tell us, you know. Just don't hit the one star.
But reviews are nice. I'll tell you what, we start getting reviews, we'll start reading them on air.
That's it.
Even if they're bad.
Oh, yeah. That'll be fun. Yeah, until next time, let's keep it scary.
Later.
Escape.